Brad, morning to you.
Good morning, guys. Thanks for having me on. Yeah, it is frustrating. It's always a time where Melbourne in particular gets really excited about finals footy and the jealousy kicks in if you're not a part of it. Fortunately, we've been part of it in recent years, but this year not to be.
How's that feel? I know, it's a stupid question. How's it feel in terms of preparing for 2018? You're now 2 weeks into a non-playing period. I mean, how different?
It's very different. I mean, there's the obvious that you wish you were still playing, yeah. But the silver lining is we've had all the guys who need post-season surgery have already had that. In fact, some of the guys are already 8 weeks in, you know, post-surgery, which to the listeners out there might not seem like much, but if you contrast that with 2015 when we played Sydney in a preliminary final, or 2014 I think it was, we had half of that 22 go in for post-season surgery, and those 11 guys didn't start full contact training until March. So basically just before round one. So it really affects your prep for the next year. So everyone wants to be playing finals footy, but the silver lining is that we'll have a really good preparation leading into 2018.
Which is a more manic time for you, during the season or post-season, trying to get everything right before drafts and people disappear?
Oh, they're very busy times always, but they're very different in terms of my attitude towards it. In season, we have a very structured program where we're almost like robots in terms of the schedule, you know, where everything is dictated by the football schedule, and anything that needs to happen around that happens around that. There are no exceptions to the footy schedule. This time of year there's a bit more flexibility, but it's one of the more harrowing times when you've got to tell either young players or old players that their football dream, at least at North Melbourne, is over. So that's easily the worst part of our job.
How do you do it?
Players appreciate honesty, and they appreciate you being up front. So in my experience, that you're better off cutting to the chase. And I think most footy clubs do a really good job of informing their players as to their progress and give them constant weekly feedback. So most players see the writing on the wall, but it's not until it becomes an actual fact that you're going off the list that reality kicks in. So short and sharp and honest, and with as much empathy as possible.
I mean, talking about the trade period, which is, you know, but clubs look at and assess their lists. I'm wondering, do you look at it and go, these four are the only four on our list that we wouldn't contemplate, or is it 10, or is it 20? I mean, how does that work itself out? Is there any deal that, I mean, everyone's got a price, they say. Is that the case?
Yeah, it is, but we live in a very different environment to the footy fan who looks at his dream team or super coach team and makes trades based on the amount of money he's got in his salary cap. I mean, at the moment, for example, North Melbourne have really good flexibility with our total player payments, so we can look at doing a lot of deals. But even if North Melbourne and another club come up with a deal that we both think's advantageous to both, the player has to agree to that deal. So there's an extra element in it that often holds up most deals. So there's some things that clearly we would like to do, but you get hamstrung by player power, which it's certainly in the player's favour at the moment.
Well, to simplify things, and you've been, you know, reappointed at North Melbourne, and the first time that your first stage of your contract, that whole build that you took part of the first time round, didn't quite get there, made a couple of prelim finals, not that far off. Is it too simple to say that in that build period, and this is what you may have learned from that build period, you didn't have enough top-end talent? Would that be a simplification of it all?
No, I would agree, and that's without any disrespect at all to the players.
And no disrespect to anyone either.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
That in a simple terms, that's where it was.
Yep, yeah, and we have done a really thorough analysis of that, and we weren't the only club involved in it, obviously, but I mean, 2010 I took over, and the next year we went straight into a Gold Coast expansion draft where they took something like 11 of the first 18 picks. So we were in a situation where we missed the finals, and our first pick was pick 18. So it wasn't a traditional build where you go right back to the pointy end of the draft. So we had to look at all mechanisms available to improve the top-end talent on our list. We looked to trade, but to trade, you've got to have something to give to get something back. So a lot of those potential trades become zero-sum games where you're trading out a really good player to get a really good player in. What have you really achieved? And so we looked to free agency, and I think we at North Melbourne we had first mover advantage on free agency. We brought in some players on really good terms in Jared Waite, Sean Higgins, and Nick D'Alessandro, and they've all been massive contributors to our team. And Dal, in particular, as the first free agent who came to North, had a huge impact, and I believe we wouldn't have played in at least one of those preliminary finals without him.
So in the second time build round, what have you learnt then?
Well, the fact that we get a much better environment to build a team. For example, this year we have pick 4 in the draft at this stage, and that's a lot different to pick 18, which we had in 2011 going through the expansion. So we've certainly learnt a fair bit in terms of, we believe development is not just about accelerating the capability of the young players on your list. We believe it's also about identifying when a player is good enough to make it or not. So I think we'd be a little bit more ruthless with our decisions at list management, which is very, very difficult to do. But you know, you look back in hindsight, and generally you end up keeping a player a year too long rather than losing them a year too early.
It's not all about North. We want to get your thoughts. Obviously, got you in to have a look at the two big finals, but you've publicly declared the interest in Dustin and Josh Kelly. Dustin's staying. We're here. You might be able to tell us different. That'd be a story. That Josh may also recommit. What does that mean in terms of your strategy going forward? I'm sure you've got plan B and C and all those sorts of things, but I mean, they're big players, big time holes that, or names you've had penciled in on your planning. I mean, disappointed if that's the case and that's how it turns out, and the level of disappointment, did you ever think you had them?
Oh look I think you're always there's an element of hope, but I think that's what it is. I think that possession is 9/10 of the law.
Yeah.
And the players generally stay, you know, and we made some well documented changes to our list at the end of last year to give us ultimate flexibility to be able to target some top end talent. You know, we acknowledge that we need to get some top end talent to supplement what we've already got. And so our board gave the list management committee the directive to be very bold at the list management table and to be aggressive. And clearly we've been aggressive. Now, if we fall short, clearly that's disappointing in the short term, but what it does is it means that we have even more flexibility. The salary cap's gone up another 20%. So our flexibility is going to be significant. And every time you miss out, while it's disappointing, it just builds that war chest even further to keep being aggressive.
This is the first time I've had direct contact with you, so I'm going to put this question to
ever?
You. No, not ever. But
you guys never met him, Brad.
Since I heard this stuff, okay, and I want to put it to you directly, because this is the stuff that's been out there, that you were going to go to, almost went to the Gold Coast Suns, but you thought that Dustin Martin had been locked away at the Kangaroos, and that was one of the pivotal reasons why you stayed at North Melbourne. And I'm putting it to you because people have been talking about this publicly.
Yeah, but people have been making it up.
Okay, so but that's what you're saying, okay? There was no truth to that whatsoever.
No, I there was one occasion where I rang Craig Kelly and said, Ned, there isn't something going on that I don't know about, is there? Hmm. Because people are telling me things that apparently only I can know. So, in the end, you just roll your eyes and accept that you're in a speculative business where people speculate, and you guys do it every morning. Talk about what could happen and this could happen, and after a while it grows legs and betting markets come out, and it was just that nothing could have been further from the truth. And I've spoken to you about this, Gary, on and off air. And
very consistent, you mean? I'm not saying that just because you're here, and I say that all the time. I think
Gary has said that. Yeah, but he hasn't been the one speculating about, you know, the fact that there's this other side to this story, that the Gold Coast Suns offered you an enormous deal, and that you really considered it, and in the end you thought, Dustin Martin's coming, maybe I'll stay at North Melbourne, you know, as part of that.
No, I was fully committed to North Melbourne. There was only one caveat attached to that, which I've been very clear on, which was that I asked the board to go back and really do a thorough assessment on all the options.
Yep.
Whether it be full rebuild at North, whether it be we get one or two players in, to do a full assessment, and that included speaking to the playing group as to whether they felt I was the best person to take the club forward. And if they decided that wasn't me, then that was okay with me, because I've set a really strong precedent with senior players that we'll always do what's best for the club. So that was the only caveat attached to my full commitment to North Melbourne. And once Ben Buckley and Glenn Archer came back and said, we really want you to commit to North Melbourne. We've gone through the full process. Then I committed on the spot.
The pleased man in Epping is Johnny. He's the number one SEN Kangas fan. Morning to you, Johnny.
Good morning, everyone. Good morning, Brett. How you going?
Morning, Johnny. I'm well, thanks.
I like your honesty, mate. You are number one. That's what I like as a North Melbourne coach. But I've got a couple of points I want to make.
Go right ahead, Johnny.
Well, what I was going to start to Brett, if we have to play the final sometime the next year or the year after, we need a full forward and a full back. I don't know where you're going to get it from, but this year we've got a chance to pick a couple of good players. And instead of to use your recruiter to pick the players you wanted to play for North, why can't you pick it?
Well, they're really good questions, Johnny. The first part, we'd always like another key forward and key back, but we think that Ben Brown is one of the best key forwards in the competition at the moment. We think Robbie Tarrant's one of the best key defenders. So they're really good starting points for us, but clearly you need support for those guys. And in terms of the recruiting, we employ a full national-wide recruiting staff that do at least 3 years' work on every draft pool that comes through. So they know the draft pool better than I ever will. And that's not to say I don't have input. I can give certain level of expertise when it comes to the pointy end of the draft, but I'll never profess to know as much as our recruiters who do just an absolute power of work across the country.
Anything else, Deer Hunter?
Yes, I just want to comment about his hands. I still, every time I see Josh Selwood play for Geelong, it reminds me that he's supposed to be another Melbourne champion. And instead, we got Hanson. He retired. He's not good anymore for us. That's what I'm saying. You know, the recruiter sometimes, they're not picking the right player.
Good
Johnny,
point, Johnny.
You've got to let it go, though, Johnny.
Johnny,
not an exact science, Johnny.
You know what? Jack Trengove's a fantastic young man, Johnny. He retired this week. And you know who went at the pick after him? Dustin Martin. So we've all got those little skeletons in our closet. Hey, have a good weekend, Johnny, and look forward to talking to you next week.
Thank you.
We have Brad Scott in the studio with us, 942-911-16, if you want to get involved at any time at all. The phone line is open. Brad, tonight, Cats, Swans, your brother is in charge. They are the underdogs. Not often they go in heavy underdogs, but that's the case tonight. Can you make a case for the Cats?
Oh, I think you can. I mean, when you've got top-end talent, then, you know, the genuine match winners can get you over the line. The problem is the opposition have got just as many, maybe more, arguably. You know, so I think that you look at the bookends and, you know, can Geelong get enough supply into their forward half? And they've certainly got enough capability up there to kick a winning score. But
do you reckon they have?
Oh, I think they have,
going to kick them, the winning score for the Cats?
Oh, all of them. I think you look at their forward half, they've got, you know, genuine, you know, any team with, you know, where Taylor goes forward or and Hawkins, you know, if they can get on top. And the conditions probably didn't suit them last week, but they were still outplayed. So the ability to get enough ball in the midfield into your forward line is going to be the key for Geelong. Big problem. That's what Sydney are very good at stopping.
If you're Chris Scott, gee, you look like him, where do you start? Do you go sort of trying to nullify the Swans attack, or how are we going to kick the tally?
No, I think you I mean, it sounds like a cliched answer, but you've got to do both. I mean, you've got to be able to... the best form of defence is to have the ball in your hand. And so, you know, it's all out try to beat them inside the contest. But again, that's Sydney's strength. That's what they've done well for a very long period of time now. And they've probably got the best inside ball winner in the comp in Josh Kennedy.
Percentage-wise, how much do you work on your own team as opposed to how much do you work on trying to stop or nullify the opposition after the loss that they had last Friday night? Was that a big job for him, do you think, during the week, just in terms of rebuilding their confidence in themselves and that component of the lead-up to this game?
I think one of the strengths of Geelong over a fair period of time has been that they're very confident. They've got great confidence in their ability, and that starts with their best players, and it filters all the way down. So I don't think there would have been a hell of a lot of confidence building this week. It was, I assume it would have just been, hey, we know we're good enough at our best, so let's just focus on producing our best. But it's funny, I'm catching up with an old friend of mine, ex-coach Lee Matthews, this afternoon, just for a regular catch-up, and the percentage of weight that you apply to the opposition versus yourself is always an interesting debate as a coach. And Lee was very much about, at Brisbane, we'll just do what we do and the opposition can do what they like. But if we do what we do really well, then we'll win. Whereas the other coaching experience that I had under Mick Mouldhouse, he was very much opposition focused. So it was break the opposition down first and then look at what you want to do to counter that. So
where do you lie?
Right in the middle.
Yeah.
Yeah, right in the middle of the two of them. I mean, it's probably more opposition focused than Lee, but still primarily it's about what we want to do.
If you had a Brisbane Lions team that Lee had, you mightn't worry about anyone ever. How much would Chris be looking at the fact that Hawthorn are the two teams that have been able to nut Geelong in the past 17 weeks, whatever it is, and the way they played? And it's, you know, it's a simplistic, but I went up and watched them at Sydney, and it was a keepers off game, basically. The uncontested numbers were through the roof. I mean, would he be taking much out of that?
Out of the last couple of Sydney?
Well, the two losses they've had have been both to Hawthorn and the way that they play against them.
Yeah, well, I think that Geelong are capable of playing that style. But again, you don't want to try and emulate someone else and just do a poorer job of it. I mean, you've still got to be able to play to your strengths. And Geelong are capable enough to be able to shift styles, and they've certainly done that. I mean, we played them earlier this year, and I thought we outplayed them for a fair portion of the game. But then they stacked numbers behind the ball and really stifled our ball movement, and Dangerfield and Selwood got right on top of us, and we couldn't stop them. So they're still playing to your strengths as the number one, but yeah, certainly taking into account the things that teams like Hawthorn have done to beat them.
In John Longmire's case, does he just continue to do what he does with his Swans outfit, or does he try and stop in the middle too?
Well, from what I've seen this year, I don't think that the Swans change a hell of a lot, and why wouldn't they? I mean, other than the start to the year where they had a lot of injuries, what they do generally works. So that's generally the way you start the game, and you try and play to your strengths and win. But, I mean, Sydney very quickly react to scores against, so they don't like being, well, no one does, but they don't, in particular, they will change a lot if they're scored against, particularly early on. So, yeah, I think it's always about play to your strengths. They've got a good record against Geelong, so they'll go out with that mentality first up. But it's up to Geelong to turn the tables and try and get on top to force a response from Sydney.
You mentioned the effect that those two players, Danger and Joel, had when you played against them. What do they do in terms of allocating opposition to them? And, I mean, last week we saw Cochin go to Dangerfield, essentially, and Martin had Guthrie for periods of time. What will they do tonight, you reckon, the Swans? Will they back their own?
I think, again, largely they back their own, because the big danger is that you put a defensive player in there, and if you do that for Sydney, then you're pushing a player like Isaac Heaney or potentially Dan Hannabury out. So it's important to have that stopper, but if that stopper gets beaten, it's a double whammy, because the stopper's been beaten and you haven't got one of your best inside midfielders in there. So that's always a debate. But Sydney, in the past, have played a fairly accountable brand of footy, which means that one of their best players can do both. Can go in and play on a really good player like Dangerfield, but still get plenty of ball himself.
Yes. How do you nullify somebody like Kennedy? I mean, we talk about, you know, Selwood, and you talk about Dangerfield, but Kennedy...
Parker Kennedy?
Yeah, well, Kennedy is such a powerhouse in their midfield.
Yeah, he's an unbelievable player, and in the past we've tried, believe it or not, double-teaming him, and that hasn't worked. So
how do you set that up, Brad, when you try and double-team somebody around a stoppage?
Well, there are a few ways you can do it. I mean, usually it involves pushing either a winger or a forward up into the contest to outnumber around the contest, and then double-teaming the one player. It's not too dissimilar to the way you do it in basketball.
Yep.
But we've done that. So when you do that, you rob Peter to pay Paul. You take away from somewhere else, so you might lose a bit of forward structure to do it. But again, it's a double whammy when you do it, and Kennedy beats them both.
Yeah. Given the health of Liss, we've only got you for a couple of minutes longer, Brad. Which club would you like to be in charge of now after 1 week of finals?
Look, I think the home preliminary final is such an advantage, and even though Adelaide are going to get a really tough opponent next week, regardless, you know, of what happens tonight, I'd still like to take charge of Adelaide. I think they've had the best season all year. They've got the home prelim. They've qualified right where they need to be. So, you know, they've shown all year they're the best team, and only need two more games to prove it.
What do you make of the Giants West Coast Eagles? And what have you taken out of the Giants first final and their prodigious talent and all the narrative around them and how they got this talent and they haven't gelled together? I mean, what do you expect to see from them against this West Coast side who have probably, to be fair, exceeded expectation over the last two or three weeks? And credit to them, they're doing a great job. They've got Mitchell and Prittis and those experienced heads. But this young group of kids are sitting there going, we're supposed to be better than this. What do you think is going to happen?
Well, I think the first thing is that you're not supposed to be better than anything. I mean, you're only as good as you've been able to produce, and
which means it might be a nice straighten up for them.
I think so. Yeah, I've thought for the second half of this year that if GWS get their best team back together. Now, clearly, they're not going to have that. They're not going to have Cameron. You know, they're not going to have a few others. So that they're not going to have their best, but still, there's enough quality on that in that team of 22 to get the job done. And you know, I think that's the message that you know your potential means nothing this time of year. It's about what you do. And I think the GWS have got the capability to get it done, and they're still an elite running side. And as good as Mitchell and Prudis are at winning the ball, it's going to clearly be a battle of who can win the ball versus who can run and get on the outside. And if GWS can do that, then they should have the advantage. But
do you have a question about it, though? I mean, does that faith you have in, as I'm just saying impartial, be rocked by what you saw against Adelaide?
Yeah, but I'm also cognizant of the fact that you've got the best team in the competition in Adelaide playing on their home deck in a final that can make anyone look silly on their day. So I think things can change very, very quickly. And you know, the challenge is for GWS, who still have relative finals inexperience, to get back on the horse and say we're still have confidence that we're a good team, but we've got to show it now.
Question this morning from one of our callers was, Menzel was dropped because of a lack of pressure, and seemingly the same with Stevie J. How do you get it to change after a week?
Well, I think sometimes the biggest biggest weapon a coach has got in his arsenal is selection. So, you know, players can pressure. I mean, there are players who have got genuine speed and endurance, so they can do it, but it's the mindset to do it. And so when you get a bit of a kick up the backside, sometimes that's all that's required. But and the fact that the coach and the team and the leaders are placing the emphasis on it and saying, we need you to do this. This is a non-negotiable. So when you come back into the side, you do it or you'll go back out again.
You're coaching are we coaching the flair out of the footballers, out of the team? I mean, they're the two players with X factor who had the ability to do the undoable, but maybe they're defensive stuff is not as strong as what you'd like. But I mean, are we getting to a stage where we're going to
I don't think so. I mean, I have watched over the last, before Stevie J went to GWS, and watched some of the things that Stevie J did at Geelong, both the unbelievable stuff and then the stuff that you think, gee, not a lot of other players would get away with that. But I've heard Chris say publicly that, hey, we give him the license to do it, and then we try and bring up the things that we need to improve on to an acceptable level. And I thought Geelong have done that brilliantly with Stevie J over the journey, because he's had the room to play with flair and do the impossible things, because he pulls them off a lot of the time. Yeah. But you still need to have, at the underlying core, all your teammates are looking at you and saying, hey, there are non-negotiables that everyone needs to uphold. Doesn't matter how good you are.
Have the Eddie Betts flair with the Eddie Betts pressure.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's what you're looking for, ultimately. Yeah.
Has Lindsay Thomas been that player for you, that CVJ player and that conundrum for you?
Yeah, he has been at times. Yeah, he's... but, I mean, the frustrating thing with Lindsay has been that at his best, he's one of the best pressure players going around. It's the ability to sustain it over the course of the game that's the challenge for him.
Bradley, we're going to have to let you go, sadly, because I love talking footy. But this, one of the reasons we're going to let you go is, have a listen to this story. You'll enjoy this. The Aussie golfer Matt Griffin, not sure if you're sure. I know you love your golf.
Yep.
He's just had his round of golf at a tournament in Japan cancelled. Whispers. You know why?
Yep.
Because North Korea have reportedly launched a ballistic missile.
At Japan.
Well, how terrifying is that? We're going to speak with our producers.
Maybe not at it, but over it.
I'll tell you what, if you're over a 13-foot putt, it might just upset you a fraction.
Our producers have done an extraordinary job. They've got Maddie on the line.
Yeah.
Brad, thank you. And big thanks to Mazda North Melbourne. Breakfast packages minus the grand final tickets are still available for Breakfast with the Stars and the Prime Minister. Head to North Melbourne Footy Club website, nmfc.com.au.